Hello, this is Dave with the Pantograph, dated March 12th. It's Monday. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Council to Review Rental Program, Bloomington. It's by Maria Nagel. A landlord who has amassed nearly 800 city housing violations at 6 rental properties, including one destroyed by fire last month, is prompting a review on Monday of Bloomington's rental inspection program. At a special meeting at 5 p.m. Monday at City Hall, the City Council is scheduled to discuss whether changes need to be made to the program and how to deal with housing code violators in the city's administrative court. We want to have an open discussion and see where the council is on that, said interim city manager Steve Rasmussen. Ultimately, we're trying to achieve that balance between public safety and affordable housing. The 12-unit apartment building at 1101 Gettysburg Drive had 226 violations before it was destroyed by fire on February 10th. Owner Wayne Pelhank and his property manager Ed Duran also have racked up almost 600 violations at another group of rental properties Pelhank owns. The city says the pair are the worst offenders on a list of landlords whose properties are in violation of city code. Many of the landlords who chronically violate standards provide housing for low-income tenants, said Rasmussen and other city officials, adding that to condemn a building possibly would throw those tenants into homelessness. Rasmussen has suggested the council consider adding more inspectors. Currently, there are 2 rental inspectors to handle the 12,000 rental units the city is responsible for inspecting on a 3-year cycle. He also suggested fixing the program by putting some teeth in the administrative process. Since the administrative court was created in 2015 to deal with code violations, the city's focus has been on getting landlords to correct problems rather than personalize them, said City Deputy Corporation Counsel Angela Fiennes Jimenez, who prosecutes code violations for the city. For example, the city can impose a fine of $50 per violation per day, but if the problem is fixed, the fine is waived and violator pays only the $110 court cost. Fiennes Jimenez suggested the city impose monetary penalties for landlords who are chronic offenders. An accidental cooking fire was the cause of the Gettysburg Drive blaze that left 7 families homeless. The families have since been relocated, some to other Pelhank-owned properties. Because the apartment building was uninhabitable after the fire, those violations were deemed moot, but Pelhank was ordered to pay $110 in court costs. Some of the citations at Pelhank's properties in the 900 blocks of West Grove and West Front Streets have been dismissed after code violations were fixed. But he still has numerous others he needs to fix before that case is resolved. Also, at the special meeting, the council will continue an earlier discussion about a memorandum of understanding with the Friends of the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, an independent nonprofit organization that helps raise money for renovations and an endowment fund for the city-owned downtown venue. Part of the agreement calls for the city to hire a professional fundraiser for the facility and the group to contribute to the position's cost. The agreement has been placed on the council's consent agenda, which the council will vote on at its regular session, which follows the special meeting at 7 p.m. Monday. Also in the regular session, the council will vote again on whether to include a revised amount of $370,000 in the fiscal 2019 budget for the city's share of a project with McLean County to redesign the intersection of Tawanda Barnes and Ireland Grove Roads. Ward 8 Alderman Diana Hallman requested a revote because the project is in her ward and she was unable to attend the February 12th meeting, at which Mayor Terry Renner cast a tie-breaking vote that defeated the measure. The next story is headlined Mennonite Relief Sale Celebrating 60th Year by Lenora Sobota, Bloomington. The Illinois Mennonite Relief Sale will celebrate its 60th year Friday and Saturday the way people have become accustomed to enjoying it, with plenty of food, quilts, other handcrafted items, and a major auction, all to help the relief efforts of the Mennonite Central Committee. Never did we dream it would become as extensive as it's become, said Ruthie Roth, who has been involved since the very first sale in 1959 in Congerville, where her late husband, Don Roth, was in charge of the auction. With God, all things are possible. The sale and auction will be at the Interstate Center, 2301 West Market Street, Bloomington. Admission and parking are free. Friday's activities will start at 4:30 p.m. with dinner. A half chicken or two fish fillets are $10. A quarter chicken or one fish fillet is $8. The meal comes with sides and fresh homemade fruit pie for dessert. Saturday's pancake and sausage breakfast will begin at 6 a.m. Tickets are $8 for adults and $4 for children. More than 2,000 pounds of whole hog sausage is seasoned, ground, and stuffed for the breakfast and for sale in the butcher shop. About 2,200 barbecued chicken dinners, 2,200 fish dinners, and 2,200 breakfasts usually are served, according to Roth, executive secretary of the relief sale. You can come and enjoy a wonderful evening and Saturday, and know you are helping others to get food, clothing, and medicine, said Roth. A major attraction of the relief sale every year is the auction. Each year, about 100 quilts, comforters, and wall hangings are part of the auction. This year, a king-size quilt commemorating the 60th year of the sale will be auctioned. It is done in the royal blue and white colors of the Illinois Sale and features the Illinois Sale logo in the center with a heart symbolizing love and compassion for the needy, Roth said. Another featured quilt donated by the 2018 Illinois Relief Sale Board is titled The Journey. Pieced by hand, it includes small squares referencing the many individuals who dedicated hundreds of hours to create it, and butterflies representing moments in life that are treasured and God moments that hold us and encourage us through our daily life, according to the description provided. The Friday night auction will begin at 6:30 p.m. with the quilt auction beginning at 7:45 p.m. Saturday's grand auction will begin at 8:30 a.m. with quilts auctioned at 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. Amish furniture constructed in Arthur also will be part of the auction, as will theme baskets, tools, and toys. Hundreds of volunteers are involved, from those making and donating quilts and other items to those preparing and serving food to the auctioneers and those working in various booths. In addition to Friday's dinner and Saturday's breakfast, people also will be able to enjoy butterfly pork chops, barbecue, ribeye steaks, pork burgers, and hot dogs both days. Beyond the auction items, there will be specialty booths with arts and crafts, needlework, baby items, flowers, and books. The Pennsylvania Dutch Market includes many kinds of pies, homemade bread, noodles, cakes, jams and jellies, cheeses, and dried fruit. 80% of the net proceeds from the sale go to the Mennonite Central Committee. The MCC helps in 56 countries around the world, plus the United States, said Roth. If we have a calamity in America, whether it's an earthquake or hurricane or something else, Mennonite Disaster Services goes there to help. The other 20% of the proceeds stay in Central Illinois, helping such characters as the Salvation Army in Bloomington, Peoria, and Pekin. Bloomington Home Sweet Home Ministries, Peoria Rescue Mission, the Midwest Food Bank, and other food pantries. The next story is titled, Two Vying for Sheriff in Logan County, by Kevin Barlow, Lincoln. Two Lincoln natives are competing for the Republican nomination for sheriff in Logan County. Last year, after 15 years as sheriff, Stephen Nichols announced plans to retire. Hoping to take his place are former Lincoln Police Sergeant Miles Craig and Logan County Chief Deputy of Operations Mark Landers. Craig believes the most pressing issue for the sheriff's department is how to deal with less and less revenue each year. Law enforcement has to find ways to do more with less, but I want to use modern public administrative techniques to help, he said. I want to create new revenue streams to offset the burden on the taxpayers. He said accountability to the public, being financially smart, and developing community policing practices are the issues he is concentrating on. Landers also said the most pressing issue is the distribution and use of illegal drugs in the county and nation. We have to use our assets and resources wisely to combat the drug trade in Logan County and use programs such as Drug Court, the Opioid Task Force, and Safe Passages to assist, he said. Landers said he plans to develop a street crimes unit with an emphasis on drug dealers and violent offenders if elected. He also plans to appoint an elderly services officer to assist and educate seniors on scams and other crimes. Both grew up in Lincoln and attended Lincoln Community High School. No candidates have filed for the Democratic ticket. The next story is headlined, Sheriff to be Elected in Tazewell County. County's first new sheriff in two decades, by Kevin Barlow, Pekin. Voters in Tazewell County will have a new sheriff for the first time since 1998, following the announcement last year that Robert Houston will not seek a sixth term. No Democrats filed for the race, but Republicans Michael Eaton and Jeffrey Lauer are competing for the nomination. Eaton, a detective with the Pekin Police Department, said the opioid epidemic is the county's top priority and wants to implement more programs in the county jail to help those with substance abuse. He also wants to work harder to engage Tazewell County residents and create a better relationship with citizens and businesses. One of my strongest strengths is being able to unite people and work together for a better partnership and understanding, he said. Lower has been the chief deputy under Houston for the past 8 years and received his endorsement. I firmly believe experience matters, he said. I have the most budgeting, planning, and organizational training and experience. Lower also believes the drug epidemic remains one of the county's biggest issues and has vowed to take more steps to help with the problem. The next story is titled, Event to Honor Public Safety Workers, by Paul Sweech, Normal. Advocate Broman Medical Center's Service Auxiliary will pay tribute to McLean County and El Paso firefighters, police officers, telecommunicators, and emergency medical services personnel at the third annual Chase for Champions. The event will be April 14th at the Doubletree by Hilton, 10 Brickyard Drive, Bloomington. Registration is being accepted through March 16th for the event, which is open to adults 18 and older and features an amazing race style team chase, followed by a recognition dinner and silent auction. Public safety personnel selected as champions will be announced at the dinner and will receive educational scholarships. The finalists this year are officers Pedro Diaz, Jesse Lanfear, Jacob Law, and Curtis Squires of the Bloomington Police Department. Wendy Brown, telecommunicator supervisor at Metcom, Anna French, Benjamin Over, and Nicole Snodgrass, telecommunicators at Metcom, deputies Landon Cuba and Alex Freshour of the McLean County Sheriff's Department, firefighter David Killian, fire chief Brett Lucian, and Captain Thomas Wagner, all of the Towanda Fire Department. For the chase, registered teams of 3 to 4 people will begin at the Doubletree at 4 p.m. and will travel to 6 predetermined sites around Bloomington Normal, where they will compete for points. The team with the most points when the chase concludes at 5:30 p.m. will be declared the winner and will be honored at the champion dinner. Teams also can earn points by bringing a teddy bear to the event. These Bears for the Brave will be given to public safety officers who will use them to provide comfort to children in stressful situations. The dinner will begin at 5:30 p.m. with a social hour, and a meal will follow at 6:30 p.m. Attendees can bid on silent auction items and hear testimonials about the evening's honored public safety officers. Dancing will follow the dinner from 9 to 10 p.m. with music by Dexter O'Neill and the Funkyard Band. Cost of the evening is $60 for the chase and the champion dinner. Attendees may choose just the dinner for the same price. Proceeds will go to the scholarships and for a simulation lab for Advocate Broman's acute rehab unit. Registration for the chase and dinner may be completed at www.advocatehealth.com/bromenchase. Forms also are available at Advocate Broman Medical Center, Advocate Broman Thrift Shop, and Advocate Broman Outpatient Center. The next headline is titled "A Special Game for All Athletes" by Kevin Barlow. Downs. Caleb Kyle Schuberg had a big grin on his face Sunday afternoon as he took the floor at Tri-Valley High School Gymnasium in Downs for a basketball game. The 12-year-old from Leroy was one of about 20 Special Olympians participating in a fundraising event where the Special Olympians were paired with students from Leroy and Tri-Valley for a basketball game. "Basketball is my life," he said, "because you can do it, really. Because how hard can it be? It's where I go to shoot hoops and earn medals and trophies, too." Just a few minutes into the game, Caleb received a pass from one of his teammates, took a few dribbles, turned toward the rim, and took his first shot of the game. The ball swished through the hoop, marking the first points in the contest. Running back down court to play defense, Caleb turned toward the crowd and raised his hands in the air to celebrate. The game was part of a school project for Tri-Valley sophomores Reagan Danko and Kendall Peck. The two came up with the idea after seeing a presentation at an Illinois High School Association leadership conference. "We thought that creating a unified team basketball game would be a good idea," Peck said. "We encouraged people to wear white and to not choose sides, but cheer for everyone who plays." The teams were made up of Special Olympians from Downs, Leroy, and Saybrook, and included Jim Craig, 20, of Leroy. "I love basketball," he said. "I've been practicing a lot. I want to score a lot of points." Daniel Cooley, the special education living in a functional environment teacher at Leroy High School, said she was impressed by the Special Olympians. "They love to participate and they really enjoy events like this," she said. She also praised the work of Reagan and Kendall. "Sometimes students or the millennials get a bad rap, but this goes to show that there is a lot of good in our current high school classes," she said. For Tri-Valley and Leroy students to come together and make a special group of kiddos feel awesome is really something special that they should be very proud of. Proceeds from the fundraiser will benefit Special Olympics. Final figures on how much was raised was not available Sunday. It's only partly about raising money, Danko said. It's also about recognizing these athletes and letting them enjoy themselves. The next story is titled, Governor Candidates at Odds, Issue of Recreational Marijuana Split Between Parties, by Sarah Zimmerman, Springfield. Illinois Democratic candidates for governor say it's time for the state to legalize recreational marijuana, while Republican candidates oppose the idea. Nine states and Washington, D.C. have already legalized recreational marijuana. Democrats seeking their party's nomination for governor say it's time the state follows suit, arguing the move would bring in needed revenue and would be a major step toward criminal justice reform. The candidates in the March 20th primary are Senator Daniel Biss, businessman Chris Kennedy, billionaire J.B. Pritzker, educator Bob Diver, activist T.O. Hardeman, and physician Robert Marshall. On the other side, the two GOP primary candidates have opposed legalization and raised questions on the future of Illinois' medical marijuana pilot program, which is set to expire in 2020. Governor Bruce Rauner implemented the pilot program in 2015, but he has recently fought in court attempts to expand the list of qualifying conditions. He is against legalization for recreational purposes. His primary competitor, Representative Gene Ives, has consistently railed against any type of legalization. Here's a look at where the candidates stand. Recreational marijuana. While all Democratic candidates favor legalizing recreational marijuana, there are some debates about how the process should take place. The perceived frontrunner, Pritzker, Biss, and Kennedy, all favor legalization, arguing it would bring more tax revenue into a state with nearly $9 billion in unpaid bills. They also say it would help Illinois' overcrowded prison problem and fight what they see as racial disparities in sentencing and arrests. Illinois was considered to be one of the top 12 states with the most arrests for marijuana possession, according to the American Civil Liberties Union's most recent analysis in 2010. While African Americans made up 15% of the population at the time, they accounted for 58% of marijuana-related arrests. We must review and commute the sentences of people incarcerated for marijuana offenses in Illinois, said Pritzker, a Chicago entrepreneur. It's time to bring the era of mass incarcerations for minor drug offenses to an end. Kennedy of Kenilworth echoed the sentiment and said he would commute sentences on a case-by-case basis for nonviolent offenders solely convicted of possession or sale of the drug. He also wants the University of Illinois to oversee legalization, saying the school would act as a third party, not looking to profit off of a public health decision, like lobbyists in Springfield. Biss said he would go one step further. The lawmaker said he would commute sentences en masse, following the model of San Francisco, where prosecutors threw out thousands of marijuana-related convictions dating back to 1975, with no action needed from those convicted. I'm committed to a criminal justice agenda that focuses on rehabilitation and community investment rather than mass incarceration, and we must make sure that no one gets left behind, said the Evanston lawmaker. Marshall, a Burr Ridge physician, and Diver, a regional school superintendent from Marine, are both favorable to legalization. But Diver stipulates the initiative must be passed by the voters. The next story is headlined White House Plan Includes Gun Training for Teachers by Jill Colvin, Washington, D.C. President Donald Trump's plan to combat school shootings will include helping states pay for firearms training for teachers and a call to improve the background check system. But Trump's plan will not include a push to increase the minimum age for purchasing assault weapons or an embrace of more comprehensive background checks, as Trump has at times advocated. Instead, a new federal commission on school safety will examine the age issue, as well as a long list of other topics, as part of a longer-term look at school safety and violence. In a call with reporters Sunday evening, administration officials described the as a fulfillment of Trump's call for action in the wake of the school shooting in Parkland, Florida, that left 17 students and staff dead. Today we are announcing meaningful actions, steps that can be taken right away to help protect students, said Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, who will chair the commission. DeVos said that far too often the focus, after such tragedies, has been only on the most contentious fights, the things that have divided people and sent them into their entrenched corners. She described the plan as pragmatic. As part of that plan, the White House has directed the Justice Department to help states partner with local law enforcement to provide rigorous firearms training to specifically qualified volunteer school personnel, said Andrew Brimberg, director of the President's Domestic Policy Council. Trump is calling on states to pass temporary court-issued risk protection orders, which allow law enforcement to confiscate guns from individuals who pose risks to themselves and others, and to temporarily prevent them from buying firearms. The president is also calling for better coordination between mental health care, school officials, and law enforcement, and he has called for a full audit and review of the FBI tip line. In the weeks since the massacre, Trump has held listening sessions with lawmakers, survivors of recent school shootings, and the families of victims. He's also met and spoke with the heads of the National Rifle Association, the NRA, on Friday, sued Florida over a new gun law signed by Republican Governor Rick Scott that bans the purchase of firearms by anyone under the age of 21. White House spokesman Rod Shaw had said earlier Sunday that the president has been clear that he does support raising the age to 21. I don't want to get ahead of what's going to be announced, Shaw said on this week on ABC, but I will say that will be a component of it, raising the age as well as mental health. As part of the plan, the White House reiterated its support for improvements to the National Instant Criminal Background Check through the Fix NICS bill, which would penalize federal agencies that don't properly report required records and reward states that comply by providing them with federal grant preferences. Today in history. Today is Monday, March 12th, the 71st day of 2018. There are 294 days left in the year. Today's highlights. On March 12th, 1968, President Lyndon B. Johnson won the New Hampshire Democratic primary. Thought for the day? If your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, you are a leader. John Quincy Adams, American President, 1767 to 1848. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph on Monday, March 12th. Please stay tuned.